Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Welcome to the Feel Good Podcast with Kimberly Snyder. Our goal is to help you develop a lifestyle that promotes health, wholeness, and healing. Feeling good is about accepting who we are and living from a place of inner peace in our perfectly imperfect lives. Every week, we provide you with interviews with top experts in their field to support you in living your most beautiful, inspired, and joyful life with a focus on health, wellness, meditation, and spirituality, and personal empowerment. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, founder of the lifestyle brand Saluna, New York Times bestselling author and nutritionist. Now let's get started.
Quick announcement for you beauties. As you know, I'm about to have my baby and I will be going on maternity leave starting next week. Don't worry though, I have pre-recorded some amazing shows for you to enjoy while I'm spending time with my new beautiful baby boy and adjusting Bubby to having a sibling and of course hubby. In Ayurveda, there is a sacred 40 days of rest that the mother would ideally take post-birth to bond with her child and to help rejuvenate her body. So I definitely didn't do that with Bubby. I was back to work right away, but I'm really committed with this baby to observing this really sacred time with the family. And I look forward to being back with you in the upcoming months. Again, we've left so much material. We've gotten ahead with the show, so we are not going to miss a beat. We'll have lots and lots of great stuff for you on here. And I'm always with you. I will be actively on Instagram. You can still reach out. I'm going to be talking to Caitlin regularly. You can still submit questions and everything will go forward. But I just want to wish you so much love and gratitude for you being part of our community. I am so, again, just grateful for our connection and that we can be on here together. So namaste, beauty. Lots of love and see you back here soon. Hey, beauties. Welcome back to our Monday interview podcast. I am super excited for our guest today. His name is John Brownstein, and he is a trained epidemiologist, professor of biomedical informatics at Harvard Medical School, and the chief innovation officer of Boston Children's Hospital. Yeah. Very impressive resume. I cannot wait to pick your brain today, John, about all things that are going on in the world today. Yeah. Before we jump in, I want to give a quick shout out to our fan of the week. His or her name is Rocky U9, and he or she writes, love the guests that come on the show. I always feel lifted and awakened after listening. Well, Rocky U9, thank you so much for being our fan of the week. I'm so grateful for your review and for us being connected, sending you a big virtual hug wherever you are. And beauties, for your chance to also get shouted out as the fan of the week, please just take a moment or two to leave us a review on iTunes, which is free and easy and a great way to support the show. And also please make sure to subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any of these Monday interview podcasts and our Thursday Q&A podcasts with questions that come right from the community. All right. All that being said, John, thank you so much for coming on with us today. I know that you have probably been very busy, very tapped for information about everything that's going on with COVID.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride for the last few months, really. My background is infectious disease epidemiology. So, you know, this is something you sort of get trained on, prepare for a lot of years. And so, yeah, I know it's quite a crazy time right now.
And I think I heard that you recently briefed Congress on COVID.
Yeah, oh, that happened, I guess now it's been over a month. It's maybe almost 2 months ago. This was right at the beginning, starting point when we were trying to sound the alarm on this new virus, right? This was before WHO was calling it a pandemic. This was before really the White House was taking things seriously about what was sort of unfolding. And so, you know, this was about trying to sort of say, like, we need better tools, we need better technology, we need better response, because clearly, you know, where we are today, unfortunately, probably could have been prevented. So it's you know, and we still have a lot to do to prevent the sort of deaths that keep piling up right now, unfortunately.
Mm. So, John, before we dive into specific questions, how did you get interested in disease, studying disease, being an epidemiologist? It's a very interesting field to go into.
Yeah, it's kind of niche. When I was younger, I was planning to go to med school and definitely was interested in sort of clinical care. I was also very interested in math and statistics and computer science and geography. I took a semester to spend in Kenya and Uganda and learned a lot about the connection between environment and disease. So, you know, climate has direct impact on disease. Animal populations, like we've seen with coronavirus, have a direct impact on disease. Interplay between all these external factors and risk to humans is actually pretty significant. And then realize that, you know, as much as interested in medicine, there was a field called epidemiology, which could a lot of the different diverse sets of interests. And public health is such an important tool because the things that you can identify in how you work in public health, you can actually impact the lives of millions at the same time. If you study, you know, whether it's nutrition or exercise or prevention of vaccines, these are all public health tools that can save millions of lives. So at that scale, you can have real impact in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested in getting into a little bit about the animal connection in a moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been plant-based, John, now for over a decade. Yeah. And we talk about here a lot of the environmental impact of being more plant-based. We say it's not all or nothing, but my Ayurvedic doctor recently came on and talked about, you know, his perspective of, you know, in India where there's a lot of vegetarians, why, you know, the spread may be less. So anyways, that's a whole other topic I want to get into and pick your brain on. But that's really interesting to hear about your background. And in many ways, you've been, you know, one of the people most prepared to go to for information on something like this, which has never happened in our lifetime. So you mentioned earlier, you think this could have been prevented. In what way do you think if we were quarantining earlier, then there wouldn't be so much widespread?
Right. Well, there's different stages, right? So I think the earliest stages, this virus came out of animal populations, likely from bats. We know that there's all these viruses cycling in animal populations.
Right. But,
and there's a lot of work. In fact, I was part of a team that was spending a lot of time thinking about viruses as they move from animals into humans. Actually, that funding was halted by the federal government last summer. So it was kind of funny timing to stop the kind of research. But clearly with better surveillance in animal populations, better surveillance in human populations, that could have potentially been stopped at the source. And then that's one option. The other is, of course, as the cases were building up in China, you know, we did things like, you know, halt travel, but we should have been really thinking about the fact that it was going to be unlikely to prevent introductions of cases coming into the U.S. So at that point, we should have had better testing. We should have been isolating cases. We should have been contact tracing. We missed the boat. A lot more cases came in February, likely January. And so all of a sudden then we're like, shoot, we can't identify every case and isolate them. Now we have to go into social distancing, which is what we're doing today. And unfortunately there, we were pretty slow at that. And so at every step, you know, we should have done something, you know, a little bit faster. We should have been more prepared, and we got caught a little flat-footed. So yes, now communities across the country have done it, and some communities have done a much better job than others, clearly. California, where you are, has been great in terms of responding quickly, helping do, you know, this thing called flatten the curve, reducing yes. the cases. I think that's a great example of it doing done well. I think there's other places that were slow, that were, you know, succumbing to a lot of public pressure. You know, we're seeing this in Michigan right now. Georgia is opening up.
Yes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, the data doesn't suggest that that's a good idea. There are cases that are mounting that they haven't reduced the curve at all. I mean, it's still just, you know, it's at peak, if not quite at peak. So you start loosening things up, people are mixing, spreading infection, and then all of a sudden now we're going to have new cases and clearly more deaths. So
what do you think, John, about, you know, some people say, I've heard, you know, there's so much information. Yeah. It's so confusing. Yeah. There's all these videos yeah. going around. But I heard one doctor saying, you know, this is unprecedented in quarantining the healthy. Usually we quarantine the sick. And of course, we know a lot of people are asymptomatic and a lot of people are, you know, really pushing back because of the economic toll and all these small businesses. So, I mean, it's such a crazy issue. Like we're playing with, you don't want to play with people's lives, but if you were in charge of all the policy, how long would you want people quarantined for?
Well, it's not about an amount of time. It's about reducing the numbers of cases to the point where we can do things like, you know, identify a new case, trace contacts, isolate people, and do things at the individual level. But the only way you can do that is with having cases at a low enough level that can happen. And yes, it's super painful. And, you know, things could have been done sooner. In this country, there is underlying chronic conditions at levels not seen in anywhere else, right? Obesity, heart disease, diabetes. These are all risk factors for COVID, right? So, you know, you'd be in a situation where you'd have to quarantine, again, the entire population of the U.S. are close to it, given the underlying conditions that we experience. And so, unfortunately, the U.S. has a very vulnerable population. That's why we're seeing so many deaths compared to other countries, unfortunately. But the reality is, if we can just hang on a little bit to get the cases down, and then we can start to really begin to contain things. But if you have communities reopening too fast, then you just start the clock in ways over again around that. So that's, and then yes, and I clearly see the stress that it causes, but you know, we're trying to avoid having a prolonged, you know, effort. And this is what, you know, this reopening might do.
So John, you talked a lot about underlying conditions and in a way in the beginning, it was like, oh, you know, the elderly are really susceptible and, you know, protect our parents, our elderly, our grandparents. But then the scariest thing to me is when you hear cases of people that are, you know, say, oh, this person was completely healthy and they're in their 30s and they don't have any underlying conditions. Is that true? Or do these people, do you think, have some sort of susceptibility, underlying conditions maybe they're not aware of? How could someone randomly, supposedly young and healthy, perish from this?
Well, there are two things to say about that. You know, there are, you know, deaths that we have from things like flu, from, you know, appearing healthy people. You know, people might just get an increased viral load and just be a sort of unlucky in that sense. But also what we count as underlying conditions is highly variable, right? Like we're not considering necessarily obesity as an underlying chronic condition, but it is. And so you know, you have to adjust for the fact that there are underlying illnesses that may not be the traditional ones that we're looking at for chronic disease patients, but they're still ones that are major risk factors.
When you're looking for a great way to nourish your body and true beauty, a great way is through the energy-boosting, clean fuel of Sun Warrior's latest product, Lean Meal. It's packed with superfoods, protein, and essential vitamins and minerals. You can just make it into a smoothie for a nourishing snack at home or on the go. I personally love the chocolate flavor and use it in my afternoon smoothie for an extra boost of energy to help me keep up with Lil Bub. You can feel good about what you're putting into your body as this product is gluten-free, dairy-free, and has zero added sugars. Plus, it tastes great. I love Sun Warrior's mission to nourish and transform the planet one individual at a time by providing the highest quality plant-based nutrition, education, and science-backed biotechnologies. As a special bonus for all you beauties out there, use code FEELGOOD to get 20% off your order at sunwarrior.com. I know you will love this product as much as I do. Raise your vibe today and check out Lean Meal at sunwarrior.com and use the code FEELGOOD for 20% off your order. The average person breathes over 23,000 times in a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for allergens and germs to get into your nose and body and wreak havoc. That is, unless you regularly clean your nose and sinuses. For healthy breathing and a strong body, use Clear Nasal Spray. Clear is a natural nasal spray featuring xylitol, an ingredient clinically proven to work against bacteria and effectively clean, not just rinse your nose. Clear Nasal Spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Clear is natural and effective. In a recent study, researchers found that xylitol nasal sprays like Clear are just as effective as leading medicated nasal sprays. For better breathing, get Clear today. You can find it at all major retailers, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, Sprouts, Whole Foods, and everywhere else.
There's this panic with hand sanitizer and people hoarding toilet paper. I mean, what's the real science here? Do you think wearing, if you wear a mask, because I still have to go to the OBGYN, right? You know, we're super pregnant and everybody in there is wearing a mask. If you wear a mask and you wash your hands, is that good enough protection or is there other things we should be doing?
I mean, listen, I think at the end of the day, you know, the majority of us are going to handle the infection fine, right? Doesn't look like there's increased risk for pregnancies, for children, which is great. So that, you know, doesn't put you in a high risk category. So doing things like hygiene, you know, hand washing, social, trying to maintain social distancing, masks are good to prevent you from spreading infection to others. There's potentially some protection from others back to you as well, but it's good practice because, you know, you may be asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic.
Right.
You want to wear masks. You know, those are the main activities that people should be doing. It's a lot to ask to go too extreme. And at the end of the day, since our objective is really just trying to keep the health systems, you know, from being overwhelmed, it's really just about reducing transmission. It's not because necessarily you're going to get super sick and die, but it's because, you know, you're trying to limit the risk to the broader population. So that, you know, what you can do is what you can do at the end of the day. You know, we don't want to create this sort of paranoia on the part of the population that goes to extremes. I think that would do a disservice, and there's all sorts of impact on the mental health front and others. So we've got to find some balance here.
What about surfaces, John? When this first came out, I was freaked out to handle Amazon packages and people are shopping with gloves. Can these be transmitted through groceries?
You know, there's definitely some evidence that the virus can linger on surfaces. Now, you need to have enough virus on a surface to cause an infection. So even if it survives, it doesn't mean it can cause an infection. There's limited data to support that. I think the reality is, you know, we can do what we want. We can on that front, you know, in terms of trying to, you know, keep our homes clean, surfaces clean. Packages that come in from Amazon, I mean, likely virus will have died by the time it reaches you anyways. So the risk is very minimal. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, we're just trying to make calculated risks. But, you know, certain of these behaviors, they can drive you, you know, to be completely overwhelmed. So we need to sort of keep some sort of perspective and balance here.
And people are also going out and buying all these products now from, you know, echinacea, elderberry. Yeah. What do you think about all these?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of scientific evidence to support some of these things. Clearly, you know, people do things when they're sick with the cold, vitamin C boosting, and, you know, there's discussions around zinc. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, there's not a ton of backing, but if it makes people, you know, feel better or helps treat symptoms, then, you know, there's no reason. It's fine, but we got to be careful. These are not, you know, scientifically driven treatments. You see, you know, the country is struggling to figure out how to identify treatments that might work. You know, remdesivir with this antiviral medication, that has mixed results so far. So there's no silver bullet here. I mean, the best measure is to just try to keep social distancing and hygiene as much as you can. And then, you know, we'll have to be waiting for the vaccine, which will hopefully come in a year from now.
Wow. So with your family, John, I know you're a father, you have two little ones and your wife.
Yeah.
What, like in your home, are you guys just cleaning surfaces, obviously trying to keep your kids away, homeschooling? Like, what's going on with you, with your family?
No, I mean, listen, my kids have been exposed to information about infectious diseases since they were little. They have like coloring books and little dolls of the flu and Ebola. But, you know, again, I think just trying to keep perspective, right? Like, they understand the reason why we're at home and quarantining, and it's all about the greater good. But we're not driving ourselves nuts either. You know, we're trying to, you know, stay safe and do our part. But again, like, I think they have a healthy respect for infectious diseases, not like some major fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's so much uncertainty, like we were saying, John, about stress and mental health, and people are like, when is it going to become normal again? I know it's really hard to tell right now, because like you said, this is unprecedented sample size and everything keeps shifting. Yeah. But in a best case scenario, when can we hope that things will open up? Do you think school will be open up in the fall?
Yeah. I mean, my best guess is that it will be. I think that we're going to be very careful about reopening. I think there'll be staging and there'll be, you know, clear sort of analysis of the data at the time. I think we're going to see over the summer some slow reopening, because I think it's just not going to be possible to keep populations at this level, you know, for a long, prolonged time. But we have to do it thoughtfully. It has to be sort of staged in a way. It can't just be everything all at once. And as we see data unfolding and that things look okay, then we can start really relaxing the social distancing. I do think schools will reopen. I think there's going to be a hypervigilance that's going to be potentially combined some concerns. So we're, you know, our efforts around surveillance are going to be really heightened as we think about, you know, the fall.
What do you think about talk about a possible resurgence in November, December?
Yeah. I mean, this virus is here, right? Like, it's not going to go away. It's going to, you know, potentially have smaller amounts of transmission over the summer, but it's going to keep spreading until we have what this concept of herd immunity. And that just means that you have a percentage of the population that has been exposed. And when you have enough of that population, then the virus itself starts to die out, because it's just harder for it to maintain when you have so many people that are immune. And so that's sort of what, you know, what we start going for is this concept of herd immunity, which you keep hearing about. But, you know, right now we may only have like 5 to 10% of the population infected. So we have a long way to go. If herd immunity is, you know, 50 to 70% of the population, we still have a long way to go before we get there.
Is it, if you get it, are you always immune, or will there be different strains that develop that you are not immune?
It's a question a lot of people are asking. It's probably likely dependent on how much virus you were exposed to, with how much immunity you have. There's a lot of questions about how much immunity, how long you'll have it. I think that's there's research that needs to be done. So you can't guarantee that if you had it once that you won't have it again. Our best guess is that, you know, that should last at least a year. But those are some big questions that researchers are working on right now.
Yeah. So for the average person, John, like thinking, okay, this is around it, you know, you will boost our immunity, but maybe work on some of those conditions like obesity and balancing your diet, like the underlying conditions.
Those are the underlying risk factors, you know, factors that really you have a lot of control over. And of course, they're not just about risk of COVID, but the risk of all sorts of diseases. So, yeah, I mean, where you have control, right? And nutrition and exercise is really where you need to focus.
Yeah. But what do you think about all this, the testing? Do you think there needs to be more testing, or do you think the focus should just be people focusing on staying home? What are the immediate steps that we can take to really, you know, again, for the greater good?
Yeah. Well, listen, at the beginning, we should have had a lot more testing. We need more testing now, especially when it comes to essential workers and healthcare providers. I think at some point, doing testing of anybody who's had symptoms or contacts of someone who had symptoms is important if we're going to really get into a full control measure. So testing has not been where it's needed. It's starting to ramp up finally, but, you know, it's taking a very long time. But it should be to the point where everyone who wants one should be able to get a test. And it's just
so expensive.
Right. Well, that should be fully covered by, you know, payers, insurers. So that shouldn't be a burden that, you know, people should have to take on.
Right. So, John, you started this website called covidnearyou.org.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. So the idea was, and to get back to your point about testing, the lack of it, we sort of had no idea the amount of illness and that's happening in the community because people couldn't get tested. And we know there's a broad set of symptoms that people are experiencing with COVID. So we created a crowdsourcing tool that was actually based off of a tool that we built for flu called Flu Near You, which has had a lot of success and actually was built after the movie Contagion, which is getting a lot of show, a lot of people watching now.
Yes.
But the idea is like, how do you get people to report their illness, report whether they're healthy, and basically build a tool to understand emerging hotspots, understanding how well social distancing is going. And so we have this map where with over a million reports of people reporting symptoms to us, and then really trying to crowdsource illness and the epidemic in ways that testing just couldn't show us because it was so underused. So it's been great. Like, we work closely with the CDC and public health department.
Amazing.
And we've had a lot of uptake and a lot of engagement on the part of people who want to sort of help, you know, provide a better view on what's happening out there.
So how can we support it if we, we go on there and so obviously COVID, we have symptoms?
Yeah, covidnearyou.org. It's very quick. You can see other people that have reported in the site. You just, if you're healthy, you just say you're healthy and give a few bits of information about you, like your age and gender. And then if you're sick, give us your symptoms, whether you got tested. And that helps us really start to understand, you know, what people with symptoms are doing, whether they were positive. That's really helping us understand symptomology, sort of demographic features, risk factors. So it's a great resource and only takes, you know, a few seconds to engage.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. And I see here in your bio, you're also Uber's healthcare advisor. I think about that. I mean, that must be something people aren't using at all anymore.
Yeah.
Going anywhere. But healthcare, is that having to do with testing the safety of the drivers and spreading disease?
My work with Uber actually started years ago with this idea that sort of on-demand transportation could be a resource for healthcare. So access to a vehicle is a big determinant whether you can go see your doctor about your, you know, conditions. And there's plenty, huge numbers across the country of people that don't have access to care because they have no transportation. So we built a platform on top of Uber called Circulation, which essentially allow patients to have access to on-demand transportation to get them to their appointments in the same ways that, you know, other people use Uber. And it turns out that can ultimately change your course of your health if you can just get access to your care. So that we've been working with Uber and Lyft and innovative sort of ways to utilize their sort of network to support healthcare delivery. We initially started around flu shot delivery. We did on-demand flu shots and then expanded out from there.
Wow. And are you being tapped for information to help support the flu, the COVID vaccine?
Yeah. So actually one of the areas where the COVID Near You platform could help is around recruitment of people. Mm. So they're going to be looking for a lot of people to get enroll in trials for the vaccine and to be monitored. And so COVID Near You can be used as a recruiting mechanism. Absolutely.
Sounds a little scary, John, like trials for vaccines. What about all the potential, you know, side effects?
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, they're going to do small trials to understand sort of risk factors and understanding. Obviously, there's a lot known about vaccines. This is not like a total vacuum, but there's going to be risk and understanding adverse events in small groups. Once those safety studies have been done, then, of course, you can start opening up to a broader population. Mostly those studies are going to be to look at whether, in fact, it prevented your infection rather than whether, you know, it does anything bad to you.
Right, right. John, just because this is top of mind for me about to give birth to another child, it's interesting that it really doesn't affect children. Yeah. And then sometimes there's these healthy adults that do get affected. So what is it about children and babies that really does protect them from COVID?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there have been kids and there have been deaths, but it's very minimal. We don't know exactly why. Their immune systems aren't developed yet fully. There's possible that there's some cross reactivity with other exposures of coronaviruses that kids have not experienced before. You know, kids are generally healthy. We don't fully understand because, say, with flu, kids do get hit, could get hit pretty hard. So that's still something that there's actually a study that's happening out of Boston Children's where I'm based to understand that more deeply and whether it's because adults have been exposed to some other virus, which creates a cross reaction, or what is it that about the kid's immune system that is different So that's, again, a big question a lot of people are asking. It doesn't mean the kids don't get it. It also doesn't mean the kids aren't transmitting it.
Right.
And they can bring it home to their parents and their grandparents. So that's still a risk. But they aren't going to be the ones that are getting super sick from it, which is great news, clearly.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, John, for all your wisdom. And I'm really excited to actually, I did check out already COVIDnearyou.org a couple days ago. I'm going to go back on there. Thank you for being part of the front lines of this. You know, we really depend on researchers such as yourself to really help us out. And so to hear from you, a person firsthand versus all these. There's so much in the media. I mean, the media should be just somehow more regulated around this. There's so much fear. There's so much misinformation. Yeah. You must get very frustrated.
It's a lot. It's a total frenzy. It's a total frenzy, and it's hard to keep up. Even though this is my area, it's wild. So I can imagine someone who's not in this domain must feel like really overwhelmed by it.
Yes. Well, thank you again for this resource. Thank you so much for being with us today. Beauties, we're going to link to John's website, which again is COVIDnearyou.org. Please check it out and support the efforts to increase research and awareness so we can all get through this as a community and get stronger together. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back here Thursday for our next Q&A podcast. Till then, stay cozy, stay well, stay at home with your loved ones, and we will see you back here very soon.